This is slightly gimmicky. It will not even matter in some games that you take it, but it's cool.
To forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Hello everybody, thanks for all the support on the Nopen.
And Red Powell.
Hello.
We are the Bell Lost Falls Podcast. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in. And yes, we are right off the back of the Las Vegas Nopen. Like, that is, it feels like it was just yesterday. It's actually been a day or so, and I'm just about recovered.
I'm not. I crashed out for nearly 14 hours directly following when we went off air. And yeah, it was rough. And now I've had weird broken sleep ever since, so the preceding night since. I went to bed at like 9 p.m. and then slept for 3 hours, awake for 2 hours, slept for 2 hours, awake for 3 hours. Yeah, it was wonky.
But all worth it. I mean, the support from folks in the chat, across all the different channels. I mean, there was neat people hanging in and like spending their weekends with us. I mean, that's kind of why we did this. And you know, I'm just real happy it turned out as well as it did.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm really proud of what the whole team was able to accomplish. I feel like in some manners, you and I just got to be the face and the voice of it. But well, I'll speak for me. I feel like I did the least amount of work.
Oh, the seeing this, all the effort going on behind the scenes, like, which, because occasionally, look, it's a live production and things are kind of going to go south every now and then. But we got to kind of, we were all in a video chat on the back end so we could see what everyone was doing. And
yeah.
I do not envy them, and they are all champions. And we'll get them on. Maybe it won't be this week, but we'll get the team on soon if we can get the schedules lined up to talk about it. And yeah, it was a feat of effort from lots of different people. And of course, the partner streams, you know, that helped make this possible for us. I mean, you know, they didn't take any convincing to get on board with this project. And it was cool to see that the content creator team come together, or community come together, just like the community of the gamers in general come together.
And like you said, it wasn't so much like we had to ask anybody. As soon as we put it out to people that this is something we wanted to do, we were beating them off with a stick, just like trying. We had everyone and their dog wanted to be a part of this, and it was incredible to see.
Yeah, and so you know, who knows if we're going to do it again, but hopefully, you know, where the world is in a better place next year, and we don't get to do one of these again. But it was neat this one time, and there's probably some replays out there. Some truly spectacular pieces of content came out of this. If you have not heard the original song done to the stylings of My Way by Mr. Steve Joel, yeah, but do yourself a favor.
It's amazing.
It is. It really is. Oh, I'll try to link that in the show notes. And then we also raised a lot of money for charity. So all the profits from the merch sales are going to charity. And then we had a way for people to donate directly, and raised almost 8,000 USD over the course of the couple of weeks leading up to it, or a week leading up to it, and then during the show.
Very, very happy that not only was this to be a gift, essentially not a single person involved in the Nopen took any money from its proceeds. And it's just nice to see that it wasn't just done to pop a rating or to flick a profit, or it was done as a swan song to hopefully an awful 2020. And, you know, with the promise of 2021 being a much more satisfying and productive year.
Yeah. And our friends at Frontline Gaming were supporting us the whole way. Yeah, it's just, I love working with those guys. Just really good times all around. And yeah, thanks. I cannot thank people enough for tuning in and supporting us and keeping us, you know, we can talk about Warhammer all day. You know, there's even some folks were saying it's like a 36 hour long FTN episode.
Yeah. And what is wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. But engaging us in the chat, that's part about it. Sharing pictures online, sharing their hobbies and stuff with us throughout the weekend. It was really, just fueled us. I mean, I think it was like mixed rocket fuel and everything just from that feedback. I had a great time. I had a great time.
I had an amazing time.
Okay. Dark Angels.
Where's Ricky? Secrets. Is Ricky? Do I get to do this without Ricky again? Oh, he's going to be so mad. It's going
to
be great.
We should bring him in. I'll try to get him to see what he's working on. I know what he's working on. He's putting his 18 blade guard on the table. That's what he's, exactly what he's doing.
Strong.
All right. So, I mean, but Adam, you are a Dark Angels player.
I am. They are my, depending on the day, they're either my first or second love.
So
God being the other one.
Do you think that this is going to attract people that maybe aren't Dark Angels player right now?
Yes. If anybody has their silver marines, their mumbly brown marines, their purple marines, I expect them all to be Dark Angels sooner at some point. You know, because they've been Iron Hands. They were White Scars for a little while there. But yeah, 100%, we could see a bunch extra Dark Angels players out there.
Red, have you ever dipped your toe into the Dark Angel?
Oh man, realm? Let's see. It was 6th edition when the Black Knights came out. You know, when they rolled out, like that was the big rollout of the new stuff, and I was 100% on board. I've since moved on, but I was a huge fan. I love the Ravenwing concept. I think that the all bikes. It's so funny, that meme that you see going around with the White Scars up top being like, I thought we were the bike experts. So funny. So funny.
Well, literally, we are the experts in everything because everyone stole their goodness from us at some point.
Okay, you're the first.
And, you know, the first was, you know, first is best. Everyone might complain about being the firstborn child or whatnot, but, you know, firstborn's the best.
I mean, we talked about it before, right? When the Lion came out and just how amazing that was. And really, we've talked about some of the lore and how well the Horus Heresy has really, really painted them, especially with Imperium Secundus when the Dark Angels showed up and they were showing off to
He just totally forgot Curtis was hanging out in the ship.
Well, I mean, he didn't. Admittedly, I do love now, and I'm the oldest, right? And so, like, my brother Chris and everything, I've totally stolen that Lionel Johnson's phrase, first among equals kind of deal. Yep. So funny.
I love it when he's got Gilliman backed up against the wall. He's like, one more outburst like that, and you will know why I am the first, or something like that.
Oh, my man. That's so good.
Yeah, that was a good times. I do love it, though. I mean, like, oh, I don't want to sidetrack us on that book, but it was like, it's that Unremembered Empire surprised me. That was I was expecting that just to kind of be the bridge book in between, like the first half of the series and what would become the back half, but I really enjoyed it. But, you know, we've done plenty of content on that.
I was the same. I expected that to be like the build up towards Ruinstorm.
But Red, later on, I want to ask you about what your thoughts on Sigler's list that he took to the Nopen.
Oh yeah,
with the Silent King and that choice of weaponry and stuff. But we'll chat about that. That's a little foreshadowing for what's coming later in the show.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
I have barely ever played Dark Angels. I'll say Dark Angels kind of had the short end of the stick for rules wise. Like since the dawn of the game, they were the ones that just could shoot a little better. That was but this is, you know, I'm talking about like second edition, third edition and stuff. Mm. They seemed to always kind of be, and I wasn't like particularly excited about their lore or anything, but I didn't know much about them. But I had friends who were, and they were just diehard fans and probably still are to this day. But I did play, like I've played Samael before. I have I've certainly included them in various Super Friends builds and stuff, but only because they had, you know, a couple of characters had great rules.
Well, Azrael's Invuln Bubble has always been something that a lot of people patched into other codices, especially it was a big component of a lot of the Death Stars in 6th and 7th edition as well, because you take all those, you know, your XYZ blueprint super footprint unit and then give it all a 4+ invulnerable save and, you know, bobs your ankle, off you go.
Yeah, that was really great. You know, you give an invulnerable save to, I don't know, 50 conscripts or something, or
exactly right,
Frenzy and Wolves or whatever, you know, is a real utility character and also cool. Like, he's got a cool, his model, he's one of those older models that still stands up to this day.
Oh, he is so old now, so old. But he look, if he was just scaled up appropriately, he'd still look good. But the fact that he's just so small is what holds him back. I suppose that was the same as a lot of those older sculpts. Like, the actual sculpt isn't so bad. It's the scaling that just seems off by modern standards.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a long time ago.
It's like 2 decades. It's literally 20 years.
Maybe 3. Like, I don't know how. I don't know when he was. Maybe we'll find out during the break when that model first debuted.
Yeah, but
it's a long time ago. So what? Okay. So let's get into this. What does? Because now there's different flavors of Dark Angels, and they've all got, you know, different. The wings is what they're kind of known for.
Yeah.
The Deathwing, the Raven Wing. And I don't know if you guys. I mean, call it the Green Wing.
You might.
Well, it used to be, it's the Storm Wing. I call it the Storm Wing because that's kind of what it is in the Heresy. And I feel like that's what it is now. But the Green Wing essentially is the amalgamation of the Storm Wing, the Iron Wing, and the Fire Wing to an extent. The Fire Wing being their, like, their subterfuge covert. Essentially where Ravengard and Alpha Legion got all their tricks from. But yeah, that is the Green Wing. That's the vast majority of the units in the Codex come from there. And then you got their first company and your second company. The first company is, as is with many, many, many other chapters, the first company is your Dreadnoughts, is your veterans of the veterans, you know, the guys who've survived the most battles, shown the most loyalty, shown the most promise. And in Dark Angels, they're specifically indoctrinated into all the deepest secrets and have access to essentially all the super fancy tech, like all the special flails and storm shields and crazy power armors and artificer armors and terminator armors, etc. But they're predominantly there to, when fallen get discovered, to bring them down and to go into the heart of the enemy and destroy them, as a lot of Terminators are supposed to do. But then there's a second company, which in a lot of other, actually, I don't even know what second companies usually are for other chapters, but their one's the Raven Wings. So that's a predominantly mounted forward attack force and reconnaissance. And so that's all your bikers, land speeders, et cetera, et cetera. And their whole premise is to hunt the fallen, hunt down the... Oh, should we go over what the fallen is? Are we going to do a full expose?
Or yeah, we'll get there. We'll talk about Cypher a little bit too, but yeah, we'll get there in a second.
So they're there to hunt down the enemy, especially enemy leaders, anybody who might know the whereabouts of fallen Dark Angels. These are Dark Angels who turned against the rest of the Legion during the end of the Horus Heresy, or during the Scouring, actually, or just post the Scouring. It's actually really kind of a little bit unclear when the fall of Caliban happens. Was it after the Scouring, during the Scouring, straight after the Vengeful Spirit and the war, you know, War for Terror? But yeah, it's still a very interesting phenomenon about where it sits in the kind of the timeline of things. But yes, yeah, so those are the two kind of things that they still have special to them. And they've even now been sanctioned by Gilliman himself. Not that Azrael really cared. He was going to do it anyway. But Gilliman's like, oh, you guys are still loyal. You can have your special wings. It's fine. Everyone, no one else is following my codex anymore. Well, I'm not even following my codex.
I must say
that
he's not even.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it'd be kind of a bit of a double standard.
Not to sidetrack us, but on the live broadcast, I specifically mentioned one of my friends who is a loyal follower of Horus from day one.
Yeah.
Turns out.
I find that guy.
Yeah. No, it turns out he's in the Ultramarines now.
I
don't know. Yeah, I don't know what, you know. Oh, my goodness. We'll come back to that. We'll put a pin in that one and come back.
Yeah, so this book has really allowed you to make either of those wings into its own specialized force. So you have a Vanguard or an Outrider detachment. And if everything within that detachment has either of those keywords of the first company and the second company being the Raven Wing or Dark Wing, Blazer Raven Wing or... or Deathwing, Darkwing. It's not even a thing.
It's a duck.
Duckwing. It's a flying V.
There is a Darkwing.
It's the power of friendship within every chapter. It's the Duckwing. And they get certain bonuses. Most important one being, and I suppose the one we're here to talk about, is being OBSEC. So Outriders and Bikers, so regular standard old Bikers in an Outrider that has only Ravenwing keyword units, get OBSEC, e.g. the troops in that you would see as the troops in that that wing get OBSEC. And the same can be said for, I think it's all the Terminators, except for the Command Squads and the Knights and the Deathwing Knights. That's Relic Terminators, Regular Terminators, Deathwing Terminators, and Assault Terminators.
Well, so Deathwing Terminator Squads, Terminator Squads, Terminator Assault Squads, and Relic Terminator Squad units in the first company detachment gain the objective secured ability as described.
Nailed it.
Warhammer 40,000 core book. Yeah.
It's a very potent thing. It's a very potent thing.
Well,
very potent.
One more thing too is if your warlord is part of this detachment's command benefits are changed to +3 command points. So
yeah,
for the first company and the second company, if you build you know, those things with those detachments, those do not typically come in the refund your or entry command points, but these also, do.
There's some questions about this. I don't know what other ones are listed as, and I need to look into this, but someone approached me either just earlier today and said, does this mean instead of, because, well, okay, so you take a battalion and you put your warlord in it, and then it costs zero CP for you to take. Rather than costing you three, it costs none. Does this mean that instead of it costing none to put your warlord in there, you actually get three, e.g., I would start at 15 CP for my army instead of
because you spend, you actually, no, it doesn't cost you none. You buy the CP, but then you get the refund with the four sword charts.
So well, this one's worded differently, and that's causing some confusion. So yeah, I wonder if you guys know what I think the intent here is for it to act like all the other ones, but I think the wording here is different.
I don't know the wording is different, but we can check right now.
Do it.
The command benefits of a battalion detachment is plus three command points if your warlord is part of this detachment. So that is the exact same wording as this here.
Beautiful. Good, 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 good. Because some people seem to be of the opinion otherwise.
If your warlord is part of this detachment, this detachment's command benefits are changed to plus three command. So like a Vanguard detachment, the command benefits is none. You know what I mean? So you just, instead of none, it's the same thing as it is for a battalion.
Mm. I like it. I still like it a lot. I still think it's a very potent way of playing Dark Angels. And so a lot has been made of the Deathwing components of this, but I think it's more, this codex is far more significant for the Ravenwing components. I think even in the index, the Dark Angels index, everyone's all of the opinion that Deathwing Terminators are the best Terminators in the game, bar none. Possibly Death Guard have something to say about that now, but the fact that they can now be OBSEC as well, I think just puts them over the top. No comparison left. But they didn't, I'm of the opinion they didn't particularly need that buff. They were already, like I said, super powerful. The changes to Ravenwing are far more significant. The Ravenwing units going from something that, you know, you take maybe a unit or two of to, you know, flex unit or two to put some dynamic portions in your army to just being, hey, these are good enough to build a whole core of 2,000 points around is very exciting to me. And that's how I want to play the game. I think Ravenwing is exactly what I want to do.
A movement, you know, wins games. You know, how often do we see that come up? All the time. But let's talk about those Terminators for a minute. We'll go in order. First company, second company. So with the Terminators, actually, I played with some Death Guard Terminators last night. Blightlord Terminators specifically. And I love them.
They're phenomenal.
That 4+ invulnerable save and just, you know, damage reduction all day long was really good. But what do Deathwing Terminators get now?
Everything.
Like, well, literally, they don't get the damage reduction, but they basically have transhuman physiology the whole time.
Well, yeah, they had that the whole time. And that's also been transposed over to things like Blade Guard, which all of a sudden makes their Blade Guard just insanely durable for their points cost. And as I should also say that in the index, things like Lance Beaters, things like regular bikes didn't get Jink. Because Jink was its own special rule, it wasn't attached to the keyword. Now it's been attached to the keyword. E.g., if your unit gets Ravenwing, like you can take a captain on a bike gets the Ravenwing keyword in as does the Primaris Chappie on a bike. And so, e.g., now they would get Jink as well. And Jink is a phenomenally powerful.
Yeah, how this is worded is Dark Angel detachment is one that only includes Dark Angel models, so on and so forth. Ravenwing units and Dark Angels detachments that do not already have the Jink ability gain the Jink ability. Deathwing and Inner Circle units and Dark Angel detachments that do not already have the Inner Circle ability gain the Inner Circle ability.
Yeah, so literally anybody who's got these keywords just get those abilities now, which I think elevates a lot of those units. I bought and built five Lance Beaters.
Let me go down the Inner Circle rule just in case folks don't know what it is. Inner Circle. Each time a morale test is taken for this unit, it is automatically passed. That can incentivize you to take larger units where you might not have wanted to before, you know, going into whatever, you know, meta you're into. Next bullet point. While this unit is within engagement range of any enemy fallen units, unless this unit has the vehicle keyword, this unit cannot be selected to fall back. I don't know how you ever would against fallen units, but hey.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's correct.
You can't, so don't. Each time you select this unit to fall back, unless it has the vehicle, Ravenwing, or Chaptermaster keyword, roll 2d6. If the result is less or equal to the unit's leadership characteristic, it can fall back. Otherwise, it cannot fall back and must remain stationary instead. This goes back to the stories of where the Deathwing originated from. The original stories, it captured so many people's imaginations. This is where, you know, they're tying the feathers on their armor. This is that original story is where all the feathers and stuff come from. It's It's pretty cool. If you haven't checked it out, look into it. Each time an attack is made against this unit, if the unit has the infantry keyword, an unmodified wound roll of 1 to 3 always fails, irrespective of any abilities that the weapon or the model making that attack may have. So I don't know what is better, like neg 1 damage reduction because of the disgustingly resilient, or this permanent transhuman physiology. But I do think that what you were just talking about with things like Blade Guard, with them getting this keyword and that working for them, I mean, it's like a truckload of free CP every game.
Exactly right. And not only does it pull down your CP expenditure, it's just a blanket amazing rule. It's oppressive. Like, a lot of people are packing multi-melters. You would be twos. Nah, sorry, bro, fours. It's such a limitation. You think about what this would be on a hit roll. This would be essentially a permanent negative two to hit for a lot of people, or, you know, a permanent negative one, possibly negative two. It's just a really, really, really good buff. And I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's too good, but we'll see. I feel like it's too good. I feel like I'm going to get nerfed because it just feels too good to be true.
I don't know, man. I mean, like, say, this does affect a lot of weapons, but it affects a lot of weapons that people take specifically to kill certain other things. You know, it's not like storm bolters. I mean, heck, Red, what are you thinking about? Like Gauss blasters and stuff. Do they really care about this rule?
I mean, so they're strength 5 to toughness 4, right? And so it's not a huge deal as much as they're AP minus 2. And so the gauze, when you talk about gauze blasters, or it's really the Reapers in this case, strength 5, AP minus 2, that AP minus 2 is kind of what gets around the Terminators, because that takes them to their, you know, they're already at 2 up invuln, or 2 up armor save. They have a 4 up invuln. It puts them at their 4 up invuln. So wounding on 4s, like, there's enough mass. It's really that the Terminators have to get it.
Yeah, I just see that it's going to affect stuff that's dominating the game right now. Like we saw with the Sisters over the weekend, just popping multi-melta shots off like nobody's business. Mm. But I just don't know if it affects most other armies all that much. I see it as a good foil, is what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's not powerful. I think it's incredibly powerful. I just think that it puts something interesting into the mix that is currently not there.
It is. And you know, when it comes to, like, so, I mean, that's a huge benefit of plasma, right? Like, overcharging plasma, normally that would solve this problem, but it doesn't. And so it really throws a lot of loops into a lot of different folks. In my opinion, it's not as big of a deal with the Necron specifically, because, I mean, and as I'll talk about with, like, Siegler's list, my list, similarly, I've got 60 warriors with each of those, with those Reapers, which is nice and all, but they are definitely tough. I mean, there's a lot to them that makes them really tough. You put them in the right piece of terrain and right area, I mean, digging them, then that's we didn't just, you know, we talked about movement and everything, but on top of it, part of this is the staying game, right? And being able to hang in there. And so if Ravenwing has the maneuver capability to get wherever on the field quickly, the Deathwing has the ability to stick it out. And that's huge.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
I agree. I agree exactly what you said there.
We should probably read the rest of the, like, the, we've jumped around. We've now jumped through like 10 pages of stuff.
No, let's jump through 13.
All right, look. Well, I just want to, we mentioned the fact that Vanguard detachment, and maybe it wasn't clear how we got there. If every unit in your army is, except Agents of the Imperium or unaligned, is Dark Angels, then you get the bonus doctrine of Sons of the Line, and we'll talk about that in a second. If every unit in your army has the Dark Angels keyword, then Dark Angels Vanguard's detachment that only contain models with the Deathwing and or Inner Circle keyword gain the First Company ability. That's how you get, that's why we were talking about the Vanguard detachment and the First Company. And then if every unit in your army has the Dark Angels keyword, then Dark Angels Outrider detachments that only contain models in the Ravenwing gain the Second Company ability. That's what we'll talk about that in just a moment.
They also, I don't know whether this is more jumping around, but they had a big super doctrine change.
Yeah, it is. No, that's, we're right. That's actually on the same page. This is on page 42 of the codex.
Yeah, so it used to be that, you know, in Devastator Doctrine, you got plus 6 inches range to heavy and rapid fire weapons, I think. And that was, you know, that's fine, whatever. It was okay. I actually quite liked it a lot in a lot of games. I'm not sure if I'm going to miss it because, you know, what we got is extremely powerful. But, man, playing against Harlequins, it was really nice. Like, I mean, their minus 6-inch range didn't matter, and we just got to play the game as regular humans without all the jank attached. But now it's broken down into 3 layers, and they all seem pretty good. Broken, but good.
Yeah, this is Devastator Doctrine, so basically right when it kicks off. And I still stand to this day that If you're a Marine Army and you get your specialness in the first turn of the game, it's a lot more powerful than some of the other late game stuff. So we got Speed of the Raven. While the Devastator Doctrine is active for your army, add 3 inches to the move characteristic of Ravenwing models from your army. Ravenwing units from your army are eligible to shoot in a turn in which they advanced. Each time a model in that unit makes a ranged attack in the turn in which it advanced, that attack suffers a penalty incurred to the hit roll as if it were firing an assault weapon.
It's very nice. And also, for those who don't know what Jink is, Jink reads that if you move or if you have, it pretty much means in the first turn, even if you haven't moved, and you went second and you get shot, you have a 5+ invulnerable save. But if you ever go through a movement phase and remain stationary, you don't get anything. Otherwise, you have a 5+ invuln. If you've moved at all, if you've advanced, you have a 4+ invulnerable save. This means this army of what I would assume is like a core of a bunch of Outriders, Bikes, Black Knights, etc. Land speeders, whatever, moves +3 inches, still gets to shoot and at -1, and the whole army has now got a 4+ invulnerable save. It's actually amazing.
Yeah, and here's something else. They have a super doctrine that's broken up against every doctrine, like every phase. So fire discipline. While the tactical doctrine is active for your army, infantry models from your army, excluding Deathwing, can make attacks with rapid fire and assault weapons, excluding blast weapons, while within engagement range of enemy units, but must target an enemy unit they're engaged with of its own. In such circumstances, the model can target an enemy unit even if the other friendly units are within engagement range of the same enemy unit. And while it's making it such attack, it has a ballistic skill of 5+. So a little bit less reliable, but you get all those shots that you weren't going to get anyway.
So I think to note here as well, it's almost funny to say that every one of these rules has an extra rule that functions in cohort with it, because their chapter tactic is if you haven't moved in the movement phase, you get +1 to hit. So if you are shooting into combat, it means you haven't moved and you'll be hitting on 4s with that shooting into combat ability. So yeah, there's always more than meets the eye with this book, and I feel like that's very Dark Angel-y.
Yeah, implacable. So while the assault doctrine is active for your army, each time a Deathwing infantry or Deathwing dreadnought model from your army makes a melee attack against a character unit or a unit which contains any models with wounds characteristic of 8 or more, you can re-roll the wound roll.
Yes. I feel like this one's too much. Why? We didn't need this one.
You think, okay, I think it's one of those that even like, I look at it in the service, I'm like, I mean, if you're swinging with Power Fist and stuff, then so? But this is one of those that makes up for you having taken casualties from previous rounds.
Oh, so you think this is like Ferocity for Blood Angels, whatever it's called.
Yeah. Just basically, it kind of shores up your any 2 or 3 casualties you may have taken from the squad. You'll get your variance is smoothed out from a normal round of attacks. Therefore, kind of makes it feel like you had 2 or 3 more people in the squad.
I always liked that perspective from absolutely right. It could very well be the way this thing needs to be looked at. We're going back and forth here. I seem to be the one.
To be fair, I am a huge fan of the lore, and we haven't talked about the Fallen yet, of course, and I don't mean to jump pages on that, but when it comes to what's there, like, I'm really excited for Dark Angel players. Unfortunately, like I said, I there's one of those lessons to be learned here about getting rid of your armies and moving on and stuff, because when they're always going to come back around, right? They're always going to come back around. And so I don't mind. I was really happy with the deal I made and the person that the army went to so that they could have them to be able to play and enjoy them. But at the same time, this is one of those moments where you're looking at it and you see what they do and you're like, oh man, I wish I still had my Dark Angels.
What's that Dark Vengeance set that had all the Terminators in it?
Yeah. I mean, and so like, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff to it. I really like their tactical doctrines, the way that they play out, and that you don't have to play Ravenwing or Death Guard to make them, Deathwing or Ravenwing to make them viable. You could actually play this army without those, and it would still be more than viable. I think what would be really cool is to see someone's kind of take and go at it. If they were, I know it's going to be pricey and cost prohibitive, but I'd like to see someone's go at trying to put it all in there, trying to make it fit. You know, we're talking Deathwing, Ravenwing, and the Stormwing. I think that might be a really interesting.
We can get to the Fallen if you'd like. I mean, that's so. There's ways. So then there's the upgrades that you can get here. You can induct your character models and transports into the Deathwing.
Yeah, this one I'm not sure. I mean, it's thematic, and I love that you can do it. I'm just not sure how often I'm going to. I'm trying to figure out an application for it. I mean, like a Redemptor Dreadnought going into the Deathwing and being and essentially getting in a, I believe that means they get in a circle, as far as I can tell. Like, only being wounded on fours seems really good when you're playing against people who take, you know, a bunch of plasma interceptors and
well, they do. So Deathwing and Inner Circle units in Dark Angels detachments that do not already have the Inner Circle ability gain the Inner Circle ability. That's one
exactly
of
the, right. So yeah, so 100% they would. And but then is it worth it for you for the, because it's 15 points. It's only going to be relevant a couple of times, like against a couple of weapons. But when it is relevant, it's going to be pretty nice. But the difference is you're not there's like. So you put that on a strength, on a toughness for a chassis, toughness for body, and the everything that's wounding you on twos, like with all things that have strength 8 or things that are strength 5 and a +1 to wound or better, that gets a huge amount of value. Going from like being toughness 7, and what all you're really doing is changing things that wound you on threes to wounding you on fours, it is slightly different. Well, but maybe I'm not seeing something. Maybe there's a unit
a captain here. Yeah, it's the captain. Mm. That I think that you want to put this on, which is actually the most expensive of the upgrade points. The rest of them are basically, they're 10 points. I mean, it's not a lot of points, and yeah, not everybody can squeeze it in their list, or it may be awkward in some situations, but it's still a 10-point upgrade to increase a Repulsor or a Storm Raven. So I think percentage-wise of the points of those things, it's basically free. But again, it's not for everybody, but I think the captain is the one that you want to always give this to if you have one in your list.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think if you wanted a captain with Inner Circle, I suppose you can make some very killy, very good captains, can't you? So maybe you're right, Paul. I'll acquiesce on that one. But the one that I like is the fact that there's like the interrogator chaplain comes with it.
Have we gone down the crazy train of the chaplain yet?
We have not gone down the crazy train. Tell you what, why don't we take a break and then we'll come back and jump right on the crazy train.
Oh man, can't wait.
All right, see you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Still got Red and Adam here.
Hello.
Hey. Crazy Train is leaving the station. You want to talk about the interrogator chaplain?
Oh, man.
Okay, so take a regular chappie, only slightly more expensive. You get an interrogator chappie. And all he does is he means anybody who fails a morale test within 6 inches of him automatically counts as being below half strength. So that's cool. That's cute. That's nice. So be it. Is what it is. But where it gets spicy is this guy is in a circle, and this is Deathwing. Sorry, this guy's I think your go-to HQ for when you want to make a inner circle detachment.
He comes inner circle. He needs 85 points base. For 25 points, you can throw a jump back on him, which I think is always the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think it's a very good call.
Can you put him on a bike?
No, that got legend. You can have him in Terminator armor, though, if you really wanted to.
Fair.
So, Aura of Dread. Well, enemy was in 6 of this model. It counts as being below half strength. So, AG, you'll fail on 1s and 2s. It's very, very good into hordes. So, you can just run into this guy, make him fail a morale test by, you know, killing whatever. Then within 6 inches, and then, you know, they lose another possible third of the unit. Very nice there. Of course, he has a spiritual leader, all that goodness. But he has Inner Circle, so it can only be wounded on a 4+. Comes with his 4+ invulnerable save for being a chappie. He knows your litanies and stuff. He can be upgraded to Master of Sanctity, and he can take this super saucy special mace. This new relic, it's the new hotness. I like it a lot.
The Mace of Redemption. This is model equipped with a Power Maul or Crozius Arcanum only. The relic replaces a Power Maul or Crozius Arcanum and has the following profile. I'd like to point out that you could take the Chaplain, Primaris Chaplain on a bike from the Space Marine Codex, also believe comes with a Crozius Arcanum, but he does not come with Deathwing or Inner Circle, and I do not see a way to include those keywords.
So he's Ravenwing. Put him on the bike, he gets the Ravenwing keyword, I believe, in the Space Marine Codex, and therefore he's the HQ. If you want to do the same thing and you want to take the HQ with the Ravenwing side, e.g., there you go.
You do that. But I'm just saying, we're talking about the Interrogator Chaplain specifically because of Deathwing Inner Circle, and this mace goes on any chaplain, but, you know, you can't.
And because it's spicy, it's something that Dark Angels do. Everyone knows what that chappie does, the black chappie. This is something that Dark Angels can do that's special. Yeah.
Agreed. So Mace of Redemption is a melee weapon, times 2 strength, neg 3 AP, damage 2. Each time an attack is made with this weapon against a Fallen or Heretic Astartes unit, an unmodified wound roll of 4 plus inflicts 2 mortal wounds on the target and the attack sequence ends. So each time you roll a 4 plus to wound, it's 2 mortal wounds. No save, no invulnerable, don't pass go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Give me your money.
Yeah.
It's good. It's very good. It's a very good weapon. And of course, there's him being a chappy, there's a bunch of ways to give him better damage, better strength, enhance the amount of... so this would go to 3 damage. Unfortunately, that doesn't translate into 3 mortal wounds on the 4+, but, you know, can't have everything. And I think we'd be greedy to ask for more because we're getting a lot here. This
Heretic Astartes is really good. Yeah, is still on, like, for instance, Mortarion. I mean, yes. and the Death Guard. They're you know, they have their special keyword and Heretic Astartes keyword, and chaos is, we know you're always going to have a presence of some chaos. What did we see? We saw 60 possessed in the previous tournament we just had the pleasure of talking about, which was a lot of possessed. I love that list. But chaos has been a mainstay in tournaments for the last year and a half, so you're going to encounter it.
It's going to be a thing. It's going to be valuable. What I really like it is in a team setting. You just wield this guy as nobody can pair Heretic Astartes into you.
Yeah.
Because their term is still have 2 wounds, guys, just to paint that little picture. this guy's just going to, every 4+ to wound is just an auto-dead Terminator, unless they got like the Lifeful Agonies or something. It's really quite potent.
Well, I want to point out also that it's a x2 strength weapon that has no neg to hit. Most of those come with a neg 1 or something, and this does not exist on this weapon. So it's even if you're not fighting chaos, you're still swinging a power fist at no neg.
Exactly right. It's still a great weapon, no matter which way you slice it.
Yeah, I like that. I do happen to like it. Another relic that I like while we're kind of talking about is a Shroud of Heroes. Each time an attack is made against the bearer, subtract 1 from the attack's hit roll. And that just pays dividends all the time. That rule does pays dividends all the time.
Yeah, you're just never going to go wrong with that one.
Well, especially if you've got a character model, you know, something that cannot be targeted because of Lookout Sora rules. They're not typically fighting someone's whole army. They're in a limited engagement situation. And so if you, the few models that can attack them, if you make their attacks worse, then it's like doubly good for you, I think.
Yeah, on top of that, if you put that on this dude who's only been wounded on a 4+, you only hit on a 4+, you only wounded on a 4+, and you have 4+ invulnerable save. That is a lot of cutting your damage output in half on the dice rolls. So yeah, it's a really potent thing. Because that's what you said. Yeah, the -1 to hit.
Yeah.
just be in the fridge. Believe in the fridge.
I like it. And that's a relic that has no prerequisite. It doesn't replace any specific thing. So you just put it, you know, wherever you want. Anybody eligible to get a relic. I dig it.
Me too. There's a couple of mainstays here. So there was one that was, it was obviously too good, and now I think it's still very good. It's the Pendant of Remembrance. It used to be an aura of 5+ feel no pain, or 5+ to ignore wounds after your save for Deathwing Infantry or Deathwing Corps, I can't remember. But now it's Deathwing Ancient Model only. In your command phase, select 1 Deathwing Infantry Corps unit from your army within 6 of the bearer. Until the start of your next command phase, each time an attack is allocated to that model, subtract 1 from the damage characteristic. I'm like, yeah, a unit with a...
A whole unit.
A whole unit.
A whole unit. Of Deathwing Terminators.
Exactly right. You take 1 chunk of unit of Deathwing Terminators. My personal preference is 4 Storm Shields, 3 Twin Lightning Claw, 2 Cyclone Missile Launchers, and 1 Mook, which is the power of your Storm Shield, because it gives you the best, the most beautiful combat squad if you'd like it, or you just keep the whole thing together and it kind of does everything. Because, if you combat squad that unit out, you get 1 melee unit with 2 Thunderhammer Storm Shields, 3 Lightning Claws, and then you get another one with 2 Thunderhammer Storm Shields and 2 Cyclones that just sit at the back of the board, and due to being Dark Angels, will hit on 2s when they stand still with the Cyclone Missile Launchers.
God.
Becomes pretty spicy.
So you take the Deathwing Apothecary, who does the feel no pain of a 6, only of a 6, but if you're reducing, you know, the damage coming in, and
no one's going to cry. Yeah. No one's going to cry about that.
Deathwing Terminator's base point costs 33 points. I think you're getting a lot of rules packed into a 33-point chassis.
And that's exactly right. I think that's some fears people have. It's not so much that these guys will be too good. It's just how much you need to remember to be able to use them. You're just like, oh, he's got this and he's got that. He's got that as well. Do they still have that? Oh, they do. Okay, cool. All right.
you'll remember the big stuff. Like, you don't take leadership modifiers, and or is it you auto pass? Like, I've already
You auto pass.
Yeah,
and then you got to roll. You got to roll 2d6 to fall back if you want to fall back.
Yeah,
you only win on a 4+, and you got +1 to your save now if you've got a storm shield, and also the 4+ vulnerable save. And
I think blah, 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 that's
and
the
they
one.
Reroll to wounds now against characters and things. Over. Yeah, sorry.
That fallback part is what you're going to have to help your opponent remember. You know, like, you know, no, the guy, the Dark Angel player, when you're like, hey, 2d6.
Yeah, that's the one everyone else needs to remember.
Yeah, everyone, but the Dark Angel players will certainly remember all that. But I think you do. You memorize those kind of key things. But I'm just saying that that's a lot of like beneficial stuff for something that I would expect it to be 40, 45 points or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's about what the Deathwing Knights are, and they're Did you know that they've got weapon skill 2+? I played with them for like I played close to 15 games with them. Yeah. And then one of my opponents on my last game I played was like, oh, you're hitting on threes. Why? I'm like, they hit on threes. Like,
because?
No. I'm like, what? I was incredulous. I'm like,
yeah. Oh, Deathwing Knights are 47 points per model.
Mm. What? They are still value. They got a bunch of extra strat support now as well.
Yeah, we'll get into the strats here in a minute. But those are the ones that have the flails.
Yeah, flail and the mace. Well, yeah. The no neg to hit Thunderhammer, essentially.
Yeah. And they're the ones that had the robes and the bigger shields and that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Just trying to help, you know, for people that are trying to... Which Terminator am I thinking about right now? The one with the robes.
Yeah.
The cool, like, lights on their tops and the... Yeah, it's cool. Pretty neat.
Is it the bony green ones or the greeny bone ones?
I think you'd call this bony green. No, greeny bone. Nope, it's bony green.
Yeah.
A notable exception, something that's not in the book, is Samael in the Landspeeder.
Yeah, I suppose because he never had a formal model made, they didn't go with it. You know, I'm really hoping, my secret little hope, is that we get a Primaris Sammy in one of the new speeders, in one of the Storm Speeders.
But see,
that would light my fire.
I thought taking him in there was like horribly inefficient anyway. Like, it just never made sense to me. Well, maybe because it's partially never had good rules or...
The speeder?
Yeah. The super support.
The only time it had good rules was in 8th edition. In 8th edition, he was quite nice. But prior to that, he was never heard of it. It was just a nothing unit.
Yeah. I mean, because there is a model. Or there was a model, I think.
Well, you got your Raven Wing upgrade sprue, which gives you everything you need to make a Talon Master.
From like 3rd edition, there was a metal model, I think.
You might be right. That might be before my time.
I think. I mean, I may be misremembering, or I may be remembering somebody's conversion from some time ago. But I do love the current model.
He's still cool. And what is even cooler about that is that that model is quite old now. It was like one of the first kind of... that was metal, and then it became
fine cast. It's a fine cast.
It was. Yeah, it's now fine cast.
Yeah. And that model is very old, and they still nailed the custode bike. Like, they nailed it. Because we got the real deals now, and they nailed that sculpt back then.
they probably...
I mean, really, compare that to some of the other stuff. Even the Dark Vengeance stuff coming out, and it still is just remarkable what they did with that.
Yeah, the foresight, the hindsight foresight is crazy.
Because Samael... he has a 15-inch base move. When he advances, it's auto 6, I believe. Then he's got the Chaptermaster rules, which is, so Grandmaster of the Raven Wing in your command phase, select one friendly Raven Wing core, Raven Wing character unit within 6 inches of this model until the start of your next command phase. Each time a model in that unit makes an attack, you can reroll the hit roll. And then rights of battle, 6-inch aura for core units to reroll hit rolls of 1.
And Belial is the chapter master for Deathwing as well. So it's really cool that you can essentially have Azrael is a Deathwing as well. So, but it's cool that if you just want to take Deathwing, you can just take a Deathwing, essentially a Deathwing chapter master in Belial or Ravenwing chapter master in Sammy, and save a few points on Azrael, you know, should you want. But I just think it's cool. It's just thematically awesome that these guys essentially are like the bosses of their own chapter. Like, they only answer to Azrael. They don't answer to each other at all, pretty much. Yeah, it's cool. It's a nice bit of fluff, and I think they've worked it in really well.
Yeah, Azrael, as we mentioned, he's a little guy.
He's a teeny tiny man.
Yeah, but bold in stats.
Yeah, he's quite nice.
Five attacks, six CP wounds. Well. Yeah.
It's like another chapter we know with a guy who hasn't primarisified, but everybody else around him seems to be doing it.
And Dante, yeah, he's the same size. Yeah, it's a little weird. But hey, whatever. Makes in the Watcher in the Dark even tinier, I guess. Or the helmet bearer, is that what it is? I mean, that's what he is for that guy. But
I've been thinking about converting one of those and like getting the lion's helm from the lion, as in the Forge World lion, and then making like a press mold, like a one-off press mold, and so I can put his actual helm in the hands of a Watcher that can follow Azrael around.
Nice.
Helm is going to be like 20 times too big for that Watcher.
He is still a Supreme Tactician. If your army is Battleforged and the model is your Warlord, you receive an additional 2 command points. That's Azrael.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. But do you see taking him as opposed to either a build your own or a chaplain?
So there's a couple of things he has over the others or a build your own. Well, first and foremost, he's not that much more expensive when you take into account all the things he does for you, especially the 2 CP. You can't actually put a price on CP. Me and Most used to joke about how much is a CP worth to XYZ army, like in points. If you were to make a quantifiable or an anecdotal value judgment on how much a CP is worth to XYZ, like a CP in the old Orcs Codex was worth more than a CP in the old Space Marine Codex, because Space Marine didn't have any good strats. But like if you could buy CP pre-game, like if you could take reinforcement points and use them to either customize something on your army or buy extra CP, how much would a CP cost for XYZ army? It's a fun little trick we went down. Like, could you make a tournament format or a game format where you get like 5,000 points of army, and it's like you have to stop your army at XYZ points limit, and then you can buy extra war gear. Like you make all the relics and warlord traits and XYZ cost points, and then you purchase your points. Points worth of allocation of special stuff. We thought it was pretty cool back then. It might not hold up now. Well, I think it's probably redundant now, seeing as you can just do all of it at will.
No, it's actually a fair thing, because we often say like when a character has an extra wound or something, like how many points would you pay for an extra wound? You know, because typically they're 5-10 more points, and then you got than a regular character or a regular non-name character, and like I probably would spend the extra 10 points for that wound or something.
Yeah, was it worth to you? It's very interesting.
Azrael's 170 points.
I think he's value.
So the Watcher in the Dark gives you a Deny the Witch against Chaos.
Yeah. Well, and he also gives out so the things that he does that are crazy and you can't really put the value on is if you're playing to take advantage of his 4+ invulnerable save bubble, he's immensely better than any chapter master. In addition to that, he gives you the extra CP, which, like I said, is very hard to quantify.
It's very specific now. His lion's helm is, while a friendly Dark Angel's infantry or Dark Angel's biker is within 6 inches of the model of this model in that unit, gain a 4+ invulnerable save against ranged attacks.
Now, there's two units, just for Adam's 2 cents, that I think get the best out of this, and one of them technically hasn't been released yet. Heavy Intercessors are going to be crazy with Azrael, and as are Inceptors, of course. I suppose Eradicators are still very good as well.
Yeah, you can make quite the little bubble, I think, of things.
Because they're low model count, high value units. Things like Hellblasters are a little bit harder, just because you need a higher density of them to really get the mileage.
Yeah, I guess if they're around him, then they're getting the rerolls to hit. They're getting the invulnerable saves. You've probably got that banner bearer we were talking about next to him. You've got a chaplain with a jump pack ready to come out and counter assault if anything gets too close.
At the same time, he can be given plus to hit and plus it to charge, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I'm digging it.
It's a nice little brick.
Man, it's kind of exciting.
It's exciting, man. I want to take an Outrider and like a Patrol now in pretty much every army. The Patrol pretty much because I think... we should talk about something that's going to be... might be controversial that it still exists, but Weapons of the Dark Age is still a thing.
All right, what makes it controversial?
Because of how good things like Plasma and Scepters are.
Let me read it. Use this stratagem in your shooting phase. When a Dark Angels unit from your army is selected to shoot, until the end of the phase, add 1 to the damage characteristic of plasma weapons. See Codex Space Marines models in that unit are equipped with. Add 1 to damage.
Mm-hmm.
The flavor text here is, the Rock's Armory houses all manner of ancient wonders.
That's cool. I agree with it. I think the whole book is an ancient wonder. But yeah, 2 CP for plus 1 damage on what can be 6 shots apiece from 6 Inceptors. So what, that's 36 shots with that strength 8 minus possibly minus 4 in TAC Doctrine, 3 damage. That's like the best shooting unit in the game.
Yeah, I was trying to see if the what all weapon options the Terminator squad, the Deathwing Terminator squad get, and they seem to only be able to get the plasma cannon.
Yeah, and they 2 plasma cannons. The other one, I'm going to be doing a little cheeky play down the road sometime somewhere where I think 5 of the Assault Hellblasters in an Impulsor with this is actually very good.
Oh, yeah.
But no one's going to believe me until I actually do it.
No, so Hellblasters have been... Like, people play them today. I mean, I don't think they're a bad unit. I think that the army list supporting them is probably not built well, but this may have the legs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the reason I like them is because they're 3 shots each, and if you do the move advance out of a Impulsor that's already done its big, fat move, you can really get around a lot of corners. There's really nowhere people can hide from that, and it's the perfect unit for going into a terrain piece, like running past the wall to get line of sight, and then just laying waste someone's backfield. I really like it a lot.
I'm glad you threw us over to the stratagems, because I want to talk about the secret agenda.
There's a bit being made of this as well.
Yeah, well, why not? It's
maybe
secret.
There should be.
Yeah. So use this stratagem after selecting secondary objectives or agendas. Do not reveal one of your selections to your opponent. The first time you score victory points or experience points for it, reveal it to your opponent. Note that you must still have a record of your selection. We recommend writing it down and concealing it until revealed. You can only use this stratagem once.
Yeah, so this has some interesting applications. I think this could be a problematic stratagem. I'd like to see like another couple of caveats added to this. I know you have to declare an action when you're doing it. Like I know you have to declare an action.
Sure.
But there's a lot of ifs, buts, and maybes about whether you can declare actions you haven't actually taken for secondaries. E.g., I haven't taken scramblers, but I declare I'm scrambling something when I don't actually have scramblers. And e.g., my opponent plays to stop me from scrambling. And there is some black and white ones. There are some gray ones. There are some ifs and buts ones. I personally think this thing is hilarious, and I will use it for as long as I can. But I expect some people to be like, Adam, maybe don't use that against this player.
Well, okay. I think you've got to look at this, and this is a themey thing. You have to declare what your other two things are. This is only one of your secondaries that you have to declare or to you can shroud. But think about over the weekend. How many times do we see people take assassination and fail to complete it because the opponent just didn't let them get those points?
Mm. Yep.
And scramblers also being one of them, deploying in a way or doing, somehow subtly manipulating the board to make that hard to do.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned assassinate, because I think people will automatically assume things of the ilk like scramblers engage or linebreaker are really good ones to do this. I think linebreaker is quite good, but I think things like assassinate, conditional things that your opponent can deny from you if they know it's coming, is really nice. Like assassinate, maybe cut off the head, even though I don't think that thing's is well weighted or appropriately weighted. I think it's very good for denying information from how your opponent wants to play and wants to deny you things, especially if they're well-versed in stopping you from getting certain objectives or stopping you from doing certain things.
I mean, I think this is slightly gimmicky. It will not even matter in some games that you take it, but it's cool.
Yeah. And I think it should, like, at tournaments, a couple of my TO mates were talking, and we're of the opinion that, like, you should text the TO what it is every game. Just so there's no ifs, no buts, no questions, whatever. Because we had there is some janky stuff like, oh yeah, write on a piece of paper, put it in your pocket. But then in your pocket, you have every single possible secondary, and you pull out whichever ones.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. These things aren't likely to happen, but these are the things TOs think about.
Yeah. They're how like, many times for decades we've played the secret objective game where all the objectives are numbered and you write down which one is your double points whatever life is always going on.
Exactly right. I don't think it's actually going to be a thing. I think it's a lot of hyperbole and panicking and questioning if buts and maybes. I think it's a lot of fun. I think I'll probably use it one game out of 5.
A little bit of like tournament housekeeping or whatever. I don't know what where we're going to be in the technology age by the time we get out there and go to tournaments again, but I would always used to print out a copy of my list for every single round of the tournament. And on the back of that list, I would write down what my psychic powers were for that. I mean, because back when you roll them or pick them at the time or whatever, I would write down anything that needed to be done on the back of that army list. And so they would know, you know, the one I gave to the opponent or whatever was going to be the one that had all the important documents or whatever, or the information on the back of it or something like that. You know, some way of tracking what was for that specific game. But that was for my benefit, not for any kind of shady play or anything.
Mm. And yeah, look, it's not going to be a thing.
Yeah.
One day, somewhere, one guy might try and jank it. He'll get caught. No one else do it again. Yeah. And no one else will even have considered it.
To come play anymore. That's
right. That is right. And that's the give and take of our community.
So let's jump on to the stasis shell.
I like this one a lot.
This is interesting. Use this stratagem in your shooting phase. When a Ravenwing model from your army shoots with an Astartes grenade launcher, the model can only make one attack with this weapon this phase. If a hit is scored, the target is caught in stasis until the start of your next turn and the attack sequence ends. While a unit, excluding vehicle and monster units, is caught in stasis, it cannot fall back.
Hmm. I am a huge fan.
Yeah, like Reb was talking about earlier about like combined arms thing, combined wings. This seems like it would work the best in a combined wing type army.
Mm. I was begging for this book to give me a reason to play Black Knights because they are and Red, you just said they were like amazing, that you felt like they're amazing when they first came out to you.
Yep.
I feel like they're still like that to me. I've just been waiting for a reason. Give me an excuse. I feel like I just got it. I feel like this is exactly what I want.
Sure.
Because they're janky, spicy, fun, exciting, and dynamic. And I think it just gives me every level of the game that I enjoy.
They can put a grenade launcher on the front of their bike.
Yeah,
right. All of them can. Man, it looks good too.
yeah,
no, I mean, for real. I mean, you look at this stuff. I mean, some of their, especially the Black Knights, look really good. But not just that. Then you take it into the gameplay of it, and it's a big deal when you consider that those Black Knights, and they can cross the distance and they can still get in there to charge, and then they use that to essentially prevent you from falling back in the fall on turn. It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's very nice. What I like this is that you know, right, Black Knights are a very potent shooting armies. Everyone knows they've got assault plasma guns, essentially. Assault 2 plasma guns.
It's the plasma talons, so they're assault weapons instead of pistol or rapid fire or whatever.
And in combat, they're good, but not great. Like, they've got 3 attacks on the charge with essentially a heavy bolter, strength 5, minus 1, 2 damage, which is absolutely fine. But where that's really cool is that, you know, this is a big, you know, you can take a big unit of 10 of these, technically. And you can go into a unit, hit with only 1 or 2 dudes into, like, 5 intercessors. There's no way you kill all 5, deny them falling back, and then, you know, it's a 450-odd point unit, possibly.
Yeah, so the unit caught, every black Ravenwing Black Knight is 40 points a model.
And then it's 5 points to give him a Corvus hammer, which why are you taking him if you ain't taking the hammer? You know?
Yeah, the hammer is where it's at. What are you doing? Yeah, you kind of glossed over. It's like, oh, it's only plus 1 strength, -1 damage, or -1 AP, 2 damage apiece. That's 2 damage on a 5-point weapon. Yeah, all day long.
Well, and not just that, but I don't know how much you guys have gone through the sprues and everything. But they have a actual like baseball bat, which is probably one of my favorite space marines.
I use that. So when I was building like custom bike chaplains and that kind of stuff, I put the bat on him, and every time he would swing, I would make that aluminum bat sound. You know, we all know what it is. I'm not going to make it now, but we all know.
You should give it a go.
No,
I think the audience wants to hear your aluminum.
We all
bat
hear sound. It. It's like you know the sound of what a kickball makes when it hits into somebody's face. You know, like we all know what an aluminum bat sound makes. And I would do that when it was a, you know, not every hit, but definitely theme cool in my head. I don't think I'm the only one. I'm not the only one.
They're so cool. I've been wanting to play them literally forever, and I actually have 30 of them. I have 30 Black Knights. Oh,
well, hey, yeah, welcome to your 1200 point army.
Oh man, we're on, game on.
That's actually closer to probably 1500 points. after you put everything on them. That's basically an army. You could do that right now. What about
I think it's spicy. Do you guys think the extra points hike hurt Outriders much? Because I'm looking at Outriders as like 3-3 Outriders, one unit of maybe a larger unit of Landspeeders or Landspeeders Vengeances, and then a big block of Black Knights. What do you think of that? Like, do you think Outriders hold up there?
I mean, in the BA list that I was running Outriders, they have since come out of the list in favor of some other things. But I still really like them. I just feel like their lack of like hard-hitting weapons for what I want to do or what I felt like I was going to go up against just wasn't cutting it. And so to me, the point increase, you know, seems a bit much. But when you compare it to a 40-point Black Knight, maybe it looks a little bit more attractive because it's got the extra wounds and extra attacks.
Yeah, well, they get OPSEC and the Black Knights don't in the Outrider detachment we were talking about. So, I mean, you could just take regular bikers. You know, it's 90 points for three regular bikers, and you give them all chain swords, and they still go and they do all right. So you might be right. Maybe I'll just experiment. That's what I love about a new codex. I just get like 3 months of just no one's going to complain about what I'm taking. I'm just going to run different stuff and muck around.
You already have the bikes. Just play with them and see what happens. You know, that's I'd love to hear the feedback for sure. Yeah. You know, what about the Dark Shroud? So the Dark Shroud has been, you know, it used to be just amazing. Like there was a time period where it was like a key component to certain builds, but now it's very similar now, or it's very similar in ability now, but does it matter? Icon of the old Caliban, while a friendly Dark Angels unit is within 6 inches of this model, each time a ranged attack is made against that unit, subtract one from that attack's hit roll.
Yeah, look, it's still very good. It's actually still got a quite big footprint on that as well. It's just it's pretty much just a value judgment by people, or whether you think that's going to be enough to make stuff more survivable enough to justify the 135 points. Because like I said, it is 135 points. Like if it was, say, 15, 20 points cheaper, it would be a lot more palatable. But 135, man, you actually get a lot for 135 points now.
Yeah. So it is 135 points, but we're all talking about, or at least we were talking about earlier, making that like bubble around Azrael, like almost invulnerable. Invulnerable is a strong word, but you know, you make it super hard to get damage on.
If you wanted to double and triple down, that's another ways and means of giving it like a very relevant buff. Where I actually, I'd actually, if it's cool with you, I don't want to steal your thunder too much on the Dark Shroud, but I feel like Dark Shroud's had its day, and this may very well be the age of the Landspeeder Vengeance. Hasn't had any age yet. Hasn't had a thing. Okay. Hasn't had an iota of anything. And this might be its heyday.
No, hit me. But that was my question. I don't know that the Ravenwing Dark Shroud is really relevant for what it does, because it doesn't have a lot of damage output. I think that's where you have to make the judgment of if its defensive capabilities are worth it to you for that point. You know, that point price point. Why are you digging on the Vengeance?
Because I think its gun is actually good now, and I feel like it's one of the, if you don't have things like Inceptors or Hellblasters, I think it's one of the only other guns in there that really gets some decent damage out of the stratagem.
It is a plasma storm battery, heavy 2d3 for both of its shot profiles. So, you know, at least, you know, what is it, two shots?
Two. Usually four.
Yeah. But damage 2, it starts out damage 2. Mm. And then so the supercharge is damage 3, so adding another damage to it.
Damage 4. It's actually pretty spicy when it gets to damage 4.
With strength 9, the cannon is strength 8, the supercharge it goes strength 9, neg 3.
And see, this is a thing you wouldn't overcharge this most of the time. Like, you overcharge it when you want to, you know, go shoot Mortarian, you know? you don't overcharge this thing for anything less. Every other time, you can soup it up with the 2 CP to go to damage 3, or you just shoot and just smash intercessors to bits. Big fan. I especially like this because I think it's actually just a really good pinch-hitting weapon into things like Plague Marines, Death Guard Termies, you know, Death Shroud, Blight Lords, things like that. I think it's nice. And 120 points, I think it's right on the money for how much it does.
Yeah, do you think you need to upgrade it to the Assault Cannon? I mean, just to give it a little bit more power. The Assault Cannon, what is it, 10 points or something?
Yeah, it's five points. Assault Cannon. Yeah. And it depends on your meta. Like, with all the damage reduction, well, in a Death Guard meta, 100% you just go for the Assault Cannon. It's just going to be better. Like, more shots, because the Heavy Bolt is only going to be one damage. But I suppose it just depends what you're facing, what you're up against. I've got a lot of Orcs. orcs, a lot of demons in my meta. So yeah, for sure, I would
put the extra six shots on it. Yeah. I think you do want to, especially for 5 points. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Oh well. I mean, I know we haven't gone through every little thing in this book, but I really dig the fact that they, both of the iconic companies of Dark Angels, are pushed so significantly. Like those mm-hmm. are most Dark Angel players that I know identify with one or the other wings more significantly yeah. than just the, I know you call it Storm Wing, but the Green Wing is what it, how I know it.
Yeah, me too. I think everyone, and that's what I really like about it, especially in the Horus Heresy, everyone can kind of identify with one mode of war. And even if you identify with a couple, you can make a single army that functions in a way that you enjoy, and then you take a few bits from that, add a few others, and then it functions in a completely different manner. And that's something I've always liked about Dark Angels. That, and I think they've got some of the best fluff and best backstory in the game.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
A lot has been made of people and our community's love for flawed characters. And I think that's my love of Dark Angels, is they're a whole flawed chapter, a whole flawed legion.
Sure. So I think there's something to it, and especially that they've got something that they're making up for, right? And not just that, but like, I mean, if everybody remembers, or you know, if you're coming in later to the game from the end of 7th edition, and I know we didn't talk about it very much, but when you go back to the Fallen and you consider the story that goes into it, and then you actually consider that they gave you the Fallen as an option to play, and that you can play as Cypher, who made it literally all the way to the Emperor's front steps, right? Like mm-hmm. he's standing on the Emperor's porch and still wasn't allowed in. And you're still not really sure what his objective is, right? Like, I mean, I like how they kind of play the book. Like, is he going to murder him, or is he going to like store him, or what? But when it goes into it, especially with everything that happened with Magnus and all, and how they were kind of tricked into helping follow through with Exterminatus on Fenris.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. But honestly, I think you can understand why people buy into playing Dark Angels, period. I mean, I like what you're saying about how, you know, people find different ways to associate themselves with different parts of the Dark Angel army. But like, and even then, like, I've seen people with complete, you know, full on Fallen armies. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it, especially again, I do have an inclination myself, because I was trying to think, you know, I was going to ask like, well, what do you identify as, Adam? But then I was trying to think, I was like, but if they asked me that question, I'm not really sure how I would, because I like the combined arms aspect, but I also like when you go back to like what you said, that, you know, each wing kind of answers unto itself, and then they answer to Azrael. And so, I mean, there's a lot of interesting little short stories that include the Dark Angels hunting down the Fallen, or some of the little secrets that they've got kept. I mean, like, imagine if everybody knew that Lionel Johnson was just sleeping on the rock, right?
Just taking his sweet time, just hanging out.
I tell you, if anything, I mean, that leaves the Dark Angels are probably one of the chapters with the most unrealized potential right now in the Imperium, with Lionel Johnson just chilling, waiting, kind of like how Gilman was for the longest time. I mean, it took.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there, like, he's not even poisoned anymore. Right? He's just sitting there.
Right. We don't really know. We know that he's in a degree of, I'm pretty sure he's in stasis still. Something similar to what Gilliman.
No, Lion.
The Lion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, you don't actually know how severely he was hurt. You don't actually know how severely he was damaged. All I know, he was like pretty much rendered comatose, beaten up by Luther. Because it was like there was the climactic bit, which actually has never been written, never been fully retold. I'm actually hoping it's somewhere to the end of this, the Luther novel I'm reading at the moment. But the battle between them, the Lion had bested him, was at the point of like cutting him down, and then hesitated because, you know, Luther's his mentor, was his closest companion throughout his pretty much his entire life until he set off into the stars. And then Luther struck him down pretty much. And we don't know whether he stabbed him in the heart, cut his head off, poisoned him psychically, you know. He did the unstoppable power thing that Mace Windu copped in Revenge of the Sith. Luther did some unlimited power on him. You don't know what happens. You don't actually know to what degree he's injured. And if it was written down, it's been rewritten a bunch of different times. So yeah, he could be healing, could be hanging out. He could be awake and just being like, not ready yet. Everyone's too stupid still.
That's what I think is happening.
Well, and what's crazy is kind of the, I don't know if he was awake, I don't know if Lionel Johnson could sit there knowing that
Gilliman was running the galaxy.
Yeah, I don't think he could.
I don't know. Maybe he's letting him do his thing because he, you know,
no, No way.
All right.
No way. I think we'd have a almost civil war in our hands with that.
I'd love that. I would love that.
But like a little
another
really
cool. Yeah.
Draw the parallel between the two. Take the Dark Angels and factor in that. So, okay, you've got Lionel Johnson versus Luther, and then take the Emperor versus Horus and look at the parallels between the two. And if you've ever looked at it, the Dark Angels essentially have their own like mini Horus heresy going on. And I mean, the Luther heresy. And except in this case, I mean, you know, the Emperor was gravely wounded. The Lion was gravely wounded, except Horus was obliterated. The Lion didn't really have that capability. And so it was more of like, I mean, as we know, Luther's still there on the rock.
He's not anymore. They broke him out.
Yeah, no spoilers.
That was one of the. This is stuff that happened at the end of. This was written into the 8th edition codex. During the battle for Fenris, and because the changeling was the one that was on the rock and steered them into attacking Fenris, and Luther got broken out. Luther got broken out of the rock, and he is free, rallying the fallen, and it's all going down.
So look at that.
There is such a cool bit in that, because it's in the timeline bits, like fallen are popping up here, there, and everywhere. Luther is seen giving like resounding oratory towards more fallen than have ever been gathered before since Caliban. And then like whole like successor chapters are going to try and fight him, and they're all just being drawn into massive traps and obliterated. And so Azrael calls in every single successor chapter, because they're still a legion. All the chapters answer to Azrael. They all get called into the rock. And just as they're having their meeting about what to do, because it's only a matter of time before they get discovered, the entire Indominus Crusade rocks up. And Azrael's there like biting his thumb going, "Oh, we're boned. Do I nuke?" Like he's like finger on the button. Do I fire all these like instant death weapons into Gilliman's flagship before he can like destroy everything that is Dark Angels? And then, big tense scene. And then Gilliman like calls and is like, "Hey, bro, you want some Primaris Marines?" And Azrael's like, "Yes, I will take some Primaris Marines, please." And then they leave. It's great.
It's awesome.
Such a good. It's really good. I may have oversold it, but that was what was going on in my head when I was reading it. Like Azrael sweating bullets, finger on the big red button that will just instantly, all the old dark age technology that Dark Angels still have. Do I just instant obliterate Gilliman? Can I do that? Can I justify doing that if he's going to instant obliterate me? Jeez. Oh, cool. He just wants to give me like a bunch of new soldiers. Oh, sweet.
Nice. Okay, good. Woo.
Jeez.
So I think this is a book we're going to continue to unpack over the next couple of weeks, very similar to how we did the Death Guard, because there's a lot here. I'd like to kind of come with next week with a couple of different maybe army list and stuff.
Mm. So I have a question to put to you guys. How do you guys deal with perceived plot holes in the storyline? Do you ignore them? Do you accept them into your heart? Do you pretend they don't exist, or you just accept, there's so many plot threads, it's hard to keep them all straight?
Give an example.
Yeah. Oh, is intentionally like just wrong or contradictory? Shouldn't say wrong. Contradictory to something else.
The whole premise of the Dark Angels is that they have to keep the fact that half their legion turned against the other one secret from everybody else. The whole modus operandi of their legion is to gather the fallen before their secret's exposed and they get expunged or, excommunicated. Cypher broke Gilliman out of a fallen Dark Angel wearing the colors of the legion, Dark Angels, broke Gilliman out of prison, enabled him and Yvraine to escape, escorted him all the way to the door of the Emperor's throne room, wearing the lion sword on his back. And not once did Gilliman be like, "There's something suspicious about this man. I wonder what his story is." Because surely he would have figured it out.
Gilliman was surely in a real Gilliman. Weird place at that moment. Like real, real weird place.
Straight from the words of Paul Murphy. Like there's the excuse.
I think all of us.
He wasn't thinking straight.
All of us have made some friends for a brief period of time. Like,
but he didn't poke around with that. He didn't ask any questions. But he knew enough to not let him in to see the Emperor.
You're at the club, and you meet some guy, and everything seems cool, and then after that night, you realize you probably don't have a lot in common.
And he's just wearing a suspected anathema on his back. Just Crazy.
So Gilliman would have of course recognized the Lion Sword.
But, well, he did. He literally said, "There's no way I'm letting you in with that blade."
So, but at the same time, you know, thinking when he woke up, it was like absolutely his hometown, his house. Like chaos is in your house, and you have to battle chaos. You don't really have super amount of time to assess the whole Legion. Your demonic brother like shows up an hour later, trying to battle. Then he gets captured, right? Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. He gets captured. So he's sitting there in a prison cell for X amount of time. And then some guy, he shows up to rake him out. You don't like, you know what? Let me just ask you a bunch of questions.
Yeah, but you know, they go on this big journey together to get to Terra.
He didn't want to make it seem like he didn't know what was going on in front of his new girlfriend.
Dang.
This is so much better than I ever thought it was going to be, Paul. Thank you. Continue. Yeah. This is so good.
I was just going to say plot holes sometimes. I mean, especially when it comes to books that aren't, I'm not saying that the story in some of these books, especially like the supplement books, isn't the best writing, but I am saying usually the best writing gets reserved for like the actual books.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in general, I wasn't a huge fan of, well, sorry, I haven't been a huge fan of campaign fluff writing, like the Vigilist campaigns, the Rising Storm? The end of
Psychic Awakening.
The Psychic Awakenings as well. I haven't been a huge fan of those, but yeah, the novels, the novellas, the Horus Heresy novels, any of the black books, sorry, the fluff in those have all been phenomenal, phenomenal things. Yeah, I was going to say.
So with plot holes and stuff, like I don't necessarily consider that. I think that if you look at as a, like I know it takes place like over like months, doesn't it? I mean, and there's probably a lot to have, like there's stories within stories there. And yeah. I'm sure that, but you got to think the way the Primarchs interacted with their legion in Gilliman's day, like they did have conversations and could respect their other captains and stuff as peers and didn't always get up in their business. And I'm willing to bet that that's one of the ways that they interacted. Like he looks at Cypher, and Cypher could have even been the Cypher from that period of time, and not just a Cypher. He is the Cypher.
Yeah, it's fun. So a lot of stuff's coming apart. Sorry, coming about Cypher and the fact that it's not his name. It's a title.
Right.
It's like the keeper of the order of Caliban, like the keeper of the standards and the honor of the order, the organization. It's like their chaplain, essentially.
The chaplain hide and seek champion of all time.
Yeah, 10,000 years and gone.
Arguably, he was the last, right? The last cycle.
Yes. Which was as far at the fall of Caliban, it's Zarak, whatever. So it's actually a psyker. It's actually a former librarian. That's right.
I think.
And it's just an interesting thing to think, is it the same guy? Is that him? Is he 10,000 years old? And he's just been jumping in and out of warp, hence he hasn't, you know, aged out like Sigismund did.
Maybe, unless it's like a Dread Pirate Robertson thing and he's passing it on.
Yes,
maybe.
That's the idea. The idea is maybe he's just, there's a couple have died. There's been a handful of different ciphers, and this is just the latest guy to pick up the mantle.
I'm going to let it go that you said Dread Pirate Robertson. Just going to let that go.
Dread Pirate Roberts?
Yeah.
What's wrong with Dread Pirate Roberts?
Dread Pirate Roberts is amazing. He called him Robertson. I was like, I don't know who that is.
I got the name wrong. Sorry. You can leave that one in.
don't say that we cut stuff out.
Yeah, we don't cut anything
that
out.
That never happens.
I know what you're talking about. Definitely. Paul does not swear. Never has.
Secret blooper reel.
But there's, they probably had this engagement that has either not been told or is something there. There could actually be something be there to where, you know, Gilliman knows a lot now. I mean, he doesn't even talk about what he talked about with the Emperor. He came out and said something, but, you know, there's a lot of suspicion there, whether or not it was Gilliman's agenda or the Emperor's agenda or what. You know, like there's, I like it that there's actual mystery there. Like, then nothing that happened in there outside of the wondrousness of, you know, the weirdness and unexpected stuff of the Yanari and Cypher and all the demon, the almost like an odyssey. It almost is the odyssey, you know, with all the temptations of the demonic forces.
Yeah.
getting there. I mean, that's fantastic enough. To me, it's just kind of plausible, holes. Not even a hole, but what is it? Suspension of disbelief that they hung out together for a little while. It's fine with me. It's intact.
It's fine for me as well. I'm willing to live with it. It's a curious thing, though. Like, it just makes me think.
Yeah.
Maybe Gilliman knows and he's okay with it. He's like, man, I don't have the manpower to fight Chaos and the Dark Angels. And the Dark Angels turn, man, they're going to be, well, if they turn, it's going to be like, it's literally going to be a Legion strength army alive and in the Imperium. Like, it's just going to be, it'll be every success chapter going over as well.
It might even be Gilliman that, because he didn't let him in the palace, that actually made Cypher change his quest. That might have been the final straw. He might have been coming there for something else. And then Gilliman still didn't trust him. He's like, I just got you here. You don't trust me? All right, it's on now. Fallen, rise up.
Maybe he just wanted to say hello to his favorite custodian. Maybe, he's like, man, I've been waiting for like 30 years to say hello to Ra. And like, sorry, 3,000 years to say hello to Ra. And this, jacked up rowboat just comes in and says, nah, it's not fair. Although apparently rowboat's still like half dead. Like if he took his armor off, he'd die, apparently.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, what was it? Cole has been like trying not to advertise that. For sure.
Yes. Because that's another one I thought that was funny. So Gilliman gets caught by the Red Corsairs. He gets caught by Huron Blackheart. And not at no point did they take his armor off. It would just be like, that's some really nice armor.
It didn't fit anybody
pirate,
else.
But you got Gilliman's armor up on your wall. Surely that's pretty cool, right? Surely you would just do that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Never mind.
We're kind of rambling.
I'll stop picking.
No. You actually asked, I think it was a great question. It's like when there's inconsistencies or things that just don't sit right with you, we hyper focus on those things. There's a several posts I've seen about some things where they mention, they'll mention a planet name with, seemingly out of sequence or a name of a character and try to, does it really mean that name of the character? Like, it might, whatever. I think this is cool. I think it's cool that we're paying this close attention.
Yeah. Me too.
But that thing that you described there, I actually kind of like it, that there is more story to tell. Like, we don't know everything. And I'm actually okay with that. I mean, that's the closest thing.
I think that's a huge thing. Having a mystery behind it is what keeps people coming back for more, right? Like, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if it was three random characters that wasn't a Primarch and wasn't Cypher and wasn't the Emperor, I don't know that I'd be that intrigued. Then I might be like, they could have done a little bit better. But there's, like, it's more exciting that we don't know everything about those characters.
Mm-hmm.
To me.
Yeah, great. But I do think most mysteries have a shelf life. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like at some point you let those mysteries go and you build up some new ones. What those are, who knows?
Are you sure, Adam? Yeah. I mean, there's two entire legions we know almost nothing about.
Nothing about, except that they're exterminated by Space Wolves, Dark Angels, and like two other legions.
Maybe
together.
10 years from now, after the Horus Heresy is concluded and everything else, then that becomes our new, saga. That type of thing becomes the new saga of stuff. I mean,
new faction.
Yeah, well, maybe Siege of Terra finishes and it's we go into the Scouring novels, and maybe that's what's following the Scouring. We go all the way back to the start of the Crusades, and like we get the Rangdon genocide, like kind of chronicle, because apparently that was as climactic and as bigger a thing, taking as much manpower as essentially anything else. Like, it was bigger than Ulanor, that battle. And so, yeah, it'd be cool to get that story told as well. And yeah, maybe this is another series of novels we might get one day. It'd be like the insurrection of like the 15th Legion or whatever it is. Actually, I don't even know what number of legions are the ones.
It's number second.
Number two?
Yeah.
Is it all? Yeah, and something in the teens.
Yeah. In the 19th, I think.
Yeah. It'd be cool to get like that, like, yeah, the stories of those.
You guys don't want another faction of Space Marines? I'm pretty sure we can come up with something.
I still want my Heresy 2.0, where it's the Primaris Marines try to do to the baby Marines what the baby Marines did to the Thunder Warriors, and the cycle continues anew, and we get that story.
I don't think they do it this time.
But, it'd be cool, dude. It would be so cool.
Yeah, there we go. Well, they got us. They got us talking about Warhammer again, folks. We're way over time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
no apologies.
No regrets. No, we got to do it. Sometimes we got to do it. I hope y'all have hung in here with us. And I would like to hear everyone's theories about that conversation. Like, why did Gilliman like get up to? Why didn't he tell Cypher to hit pound sand before they got right up to the door?
Exactly right. and all those other things. But 100%, there
could
be some.
I don't think it was Gilliman though. It was the custode that told him not to go in. Right? It wasn't Gilliman.
You might be right. I only read that book once, and I remember that was one of my biggest takeaways. Was that how is Gilliman not sus to Cypher, and then thereby be sus to the Dark Angels? But there could be more to it that I missed. There could be another novel or a compounding or a follow-on piece that I'm unaware of. So by all means, chuck it up in the comments. I'd love to know people's thoughts.
I think it was the Custodes, but it's been several years since I read it. But anyway, that's it. That's our show. Next week. So, Red, I did want to ask you about that big Silent King list that we saw, but we'll have to wait till next week. So everybody's got to come back.
Oh.
All right. Well, like, share, subscribe, leave some comments. If you can leave 5-star reviews wherever you hear us, that would be amazing. We really appreciate that. It's one of the great ways you can support the show, because once you do that, that helps other people find us, and then people keep listening and we keep doing this and everything. Anyway, it's been great. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for all your support doing the Nopen, guys. It was a phenomenal thing to be a part of, and I love everybody who contributed and hung with us during the chats.
We'll see y'all.
See ya.
Handle the truth.